Welcome to the Dr. Dreama Show, inspiration and practical strategy for achieving your dream life. I'm your host, Dr. Dreama. I'm a psychologist and life designer. I'm here to help you design the life you want and deserve. This is Dr. Dreama, and I am so pleased when the universe conspires to put people in my path that I might not have run into otherwise. And the person that I'm going to be talking to today is one of those people. I don't think we ever would have met in the real life world, but we met online. And I was so taken with her approach and what she has done and followed her journey. And I'm so super excited to introduce you here to soul strategist and spiritual mentor, Alexis Pierce. Welcome, Alexis.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Dreama.
I am so excited to talk to you today. You know, I first met Alexis online, it must be, about around 3 or 4 years ago, right?
I think so. Too long.
I know, right? And you and I have both been on many journeys since then, literally and figuratively. But first, I want to ask you, tell me about your title. It is so intriguing.
Yes, thank you. Titles are a funny thing. And if anybody out there has this struggle, they will understand it is so hard to define yourself. It's so hard to choose something that you think will both communicate some inkling of what it is that you do and the depth and the potential and promise and yet be accurate and be meaningful. So I've been on a real journey with my title, and it's gone all over the place. But as it is now, as soul strategist and spiritual mentor, is a merging of two parts of me that I've spent quite a few years trying to figure out, well, how do these things go together? So my first life, I used to be in the government, and I was a strategist, and I did high level strategy. So strategies like the National Homeland Security strategy, strategies like how do we help other countries in the middle of a crisis cease their crisis and get back into stability and peace. And we created some just incredible strategic frameworks. All of this may sound very, very boring to listen to, but it was so cutting edge, and it was so dynamic. It was a very beautiful process, and that's what I love about strategy. Anybody who doesn't get it is like, what are you talking about? Boring documents. I'm like, no, it's vision and it's movement and how you achieve it. It's very exciting for those of us in it. So when I left the government, I started working with individuals, mostly small business owners, just because they were my friends and they were struggling. And I said, well, I can help you. I know how to do strategic planning. But what I discovered was that for an individual, your highest level vision is your soul's vision of the world.
So
what
I ended up
helping them create were not strategies for business, but strategies for living their soul's calling in the world. So that's where soul strategy came from.
I'm sorry, but I just think this whole idea of working around your highest calling, I mean, that's not something that very many people talk about, and yet it's what we all desire deep down, isn't it?
It is, and I think one of the struggles, I'm actually writing a book on this right now called Lies on Purpose, because one of the struggles that many of us have is that everybody talks about purpose, but nobody really knows how to get there. And so you hear all sorts of, ideas tossed around like, well, you'll just know when you get it. It's like, oh, okay, but that doesn't help me now. Or it's a job. And so once you become a nurse or once you become a teacher, it'll all fall into place. But that's so much pressure. That's so much pressure to find this one thing that will satisfy us forever. And it also externalizes your purpose, as if you don't have a purpose now until you find it. Which seems silly to me, because there's children and there's elderly and there's people who are otherly abled and don't work traditional jobs. Like, there's so much frustration and misinformation around purpose. So one of the things I love about having this, I call it the soul system, is having this strategic approach to purpose is that it's repeatable, it's teachable, anybody can go through it. And all of us, whether we feel like it's a hazy mystery cloud that we're never going to figure out, in a 20-minute conversation, I guarantee you'll be sharing your soul's truth. You just can't hear it yourself. So once you know what to look for and the questions to ask, anybody can succeed at figuring out their soul's purpose. It's just we've made it into a mystery. It doesn't need to be.
Okay, I like that. And so how does this blend in with being a spiritual mentor?
Well, that's the fun part, because then you've got to live it, right? Like, figuring out what your purpose is only the first step. And it's, to be honest, the easy step. Then we've got to have the confidence, the courage, the clarity to keep ourselves moving, what I call, in allegiance with our truth. And that takes a level of dedication and commitment to ourselves that goes beyond business. It goes beyond personal life to really a spiritual realm where we're moving in faith, whatever that faith is for you, but we're moving in a trust of this is who I am. I can follow the things that bring me joy. I can choose to believe that I have a meaningful contribution to bring to the world. So there are practices that we can do that are best captured by the context of spirituality, whether that's a meditation practice or a breathing practice to alter the body's fight or flight state into something more creative and conducive to living in alignment with your joy and your purpose, or more mindset practices. So just a catch-all term for moving out of the realm of, you know, strategic writing it down and here's a nifty little plan to, okay, well, what are all of the pieces that I get to adjust and awaken in myself emotionally, spiritually, mentally to live that truth?
Okay. You know, okay, I have to ask a personal question here, because I have found that when somebody has aligned with their mission, the way that I hear that you are, there's a story behind it. Because at first glance, let's face it, somebody who's doing high-level government strategy is not necessarily the person you think of as a spiritual mentor.
It's true, but I'll tell you, anybody in the government knows how hard it is. It's hard. It is hard. I remember in grad school, I was focusing on ethnic conflict and civil war, which basically meant I spent 9 hours a day reading about rape and civil unrest and just horrible, horrible things. And I remember going to my mentor in grad school and crying in her office and saying, I'm not cut out for this. I have to quit. This is just emotionally ruining my life. Like, I just am a mess. And she looked at me and she said, this is exactly why you have to stay. And she became such an inspiration to me, because in her own life, she had a health struggle, turned to meditation, and as a professor in what was called security studies, so hardcore war and peace type things, to come out and turn to meditation and heal herself through that was a really big signal to the field of how things were changing. And she ended up creating a mindfulness-based program to help soldiers going into battle zones better cope with the situations they were going through and came out of afterwards. So she was a big role model to me. And so I started looking into my own self and how I was not at peace, because here we were creating strategic plans for peace and homeland security. And I was a mess. I would go home and not like myself in the mirror. I didn't have a lot of great friendships that I thought were particularly healthy. I wasn't in the best relationships. Maybe this resonates with people who are listening. You know, we tend to be like, things are okay. I guess I'm a good person, but I'm not really sure. Do I have to look at that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I had one of those moments of realization where I thought, how can I be advising other countries on how to create peace when my neighborhood's not at peace, when my family dynamics aren't at peace, when I'm not at peace? And it was just, it's so cliche to say, but it was one of those moments where I went, oh shoot, it starts within, doesn't it? All right. Wow. So yes. I took up yoga and meditation, and that's really led me forward.
You know, that's amazing, because you're talking about going from sort of a macro level to a micro level, and yet that's where it all starts, right? Whether you're dealing with countries or individuals, it's all about one person. It's all about us being able to stop and look within.
Exactly. And I had so many of those moments over the next few years, because it took me quite a while to choose to leave the government, because I loved it. I loved everything about it, but I also knew it wasn't the whole story for me. And I'm lucky in the sense that from a very young age, I knew that peace as a concept was very important to me. So I thought working on global peace was an instant win, right? Like, well done me.
Right.
But when I'd achieved all of the things that I dreamed about that I thought would take my entire life, and I was only 28, 29, I'm going, oh, that means there's more, but what is it? So when I started to look within and realize, oh, there's a whole world of peace that I haven't even touched. And it's about self-acceptance. It's about what brings me joy. It's about, oh my goodness, maybe people have had this experience too. Driving home in traffic after work and looking at the drivers and the people on the bus around you and realizing none of them are smiling.
Oh, and wow.
That thought of, here I am day after day, going home, going to work, going home, and nobody's happy. And I realized that all those people are going to get home and get off the bus, or, you know, get out of their cars, and then they'll smile. But in this one moment, the predominant feeling was, this is not a good use of my time, you know, sitting in traffic, commuting. And I realized, I don't want, if I got hit in an accident right then, I don't want that to be my last moment. I don't want that to be the predominant feeling of my last day. And that was such a big shift. It was such a big shift. It didn't mean I changed anything overnight, right? Because these things build up. Frustration builds up till you're at the last straw and then you change. But that it was all these little experiences, just realizing we don't smile as much as we all think we want to.
Right, right. I really like what you're talking about, because I think that's part of the reason that we decided to move to France. Was we were sitting in a cafe visiting one day, and we looked around and we went, oh my God, people are not completely engrossed in their cell phones. They're like having actual conversations with each other. Mm-hmm. And it was just a small moment that just struck us that how far away we had gotten away from that communication and that connection. Because it's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day stuff of life, and pretty soon, you're just in your car, you're stuck in traffic, and you're grumpy, and you're not thinking about anything else except, I'm grumpy and I don't like this.
Exactly. And then we do what I think is one of the scariest things and potentially most damaging, is we assume that to get out of it, we have to do something drastic.
Right.
Like, we've got to leave our spouse. We've got to move across the world, which of course is great. No. But, you know, I did. I quit my job and I moved to a mountain on 55 acres in New Zealand for a year by myself.
So, oh, wow.
You know, and you moved across the world. So we assume that that's the only way out, or we assume, okay, well, I've got to go shave my head and move to a monastery like my mentor did. So we have these images of big change equals big drastic movement. And for people who like their lives in some way, that can be really scary. I had a gentleman come to me. He had 6 kids and he'd been married for 35 years. And he said to me over dinner, he said, I get what you're saying about purpose and all, but I don't want to leave my wife. And I went, what are you talking? What? You don't have to. You don't have to leave your career. He had three thriving businesses. You don't have to leave your jobs. You don't have to change your marital status. There's so many ways to embrace our joy that don't involve radical external change, even though it's radical internal change.
And that's just it. It all starts with the internal change, doesn't it? The way we think about things, the way that we choose to react to things. That's where it all starts.
Exactly. Exactly. Just like my decision to leave and move and your decision to move, they didn't just start the day before we moved, right? They started with an inkling before that and an exploration of, okay, well, what would make me happier and what would feel better? And we made small changes. Like for me, when I really started to feel uncomfortable, and I was uncomfortable physically, my posture was a wreck, my stomach was a mess, I was having heart palpitations, and thank goodness I went to a really, really well-known surgeon and cardiac doctor in Washington, D.C., who'd worked on many politicians you see in the news. And he took one look at me, he said, lift your legs. And I couldn't. He said, you have a weak core. Your heart's fine. Take yoga. And that's how I started yoga.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, my body was hurting, everything. I was stressed. I was mentally stressed. I just, but it was slow. I took yoga for years. I started resisting meditation like we all do, and sometimes doing it like we all sort of do.
Right.
Spent years doing that. I changed my job a few times, you know, but staying within the government. And we make these tiny tweaks until we build the confidence in ourselves and the courage in ourselves to hear that internal voice and trust it. Because most of us hear the voice, but we don't, it's either giving us a solution that's too radical, because most people, instead of hearing the little whisper of this would be more joyful right in this moment, we just look at the long-term picture. So instead of realizing it would be great to dance for 5 minutes before cooking dinner, we're like, oh, I have to quit and move to Russia and study with a ballet expert. You know, we mix up the signals. So when we spend time building that trust with our intuition, then we can make subtle changes that lead to big changes, but it'll feel seamless.
Well, I think it's like anything. It's like when you begin a yoga practice, you're not going to know what to do with your body. You have to learn to listen to your body, right? And you build that yoga muscle, so to speak. And I think with intuition, listening to ourselves, I think that's a muscle too, because we're so accustomed to externalizing everything. It's like,
okay.
You know, this is what our culture tells us to do. So therefore, this must be what I do, instead of going, wait, what do I really want? What's important to me? What are my values? And that's a muscle that I think that we don't use enough, that muscle of asking ourselves, what do I want? What's important to me?
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right. When I moved into the coaching world, I guess 5 years ago now, one of the most frustrating things for me was when people would ask those questions, because they seem so simple to answer. Well, what do you value? What do you want? What do you really want? What's your big dream? What do you really want? What's your intention? You know, seemingly easy questions. And I was so overwhelmed that I didn't know how to answer them. I guess a part of me could answer them, but the answer would change based on who was asking and what the topic was and what the scenario was. And I got so frustrated that I ended up doing a practice for a few years that I want to share here, because it was so powerful for me. And that was, instead of asking myself what I want, I asked myself 300 times a day, what would be the most loving choice right now?
Mm.
And for the first probably 6 months, I kid you not, I didn't even hear an answer, but I kept asking the question. And then what I started getting were these little flashes. It was like a firefly flew by and I was like, oh, I saw something, but I couldn't understand what it was. I couldn't hear the answer. I couldn't really grasp it, but I knew that it was starting to come. And then after about a year, I started to hear the answer. That doesn't mean you have to follow it, but you start to hear the answer of what the loving choice is. And to me, it was such a win, because now I had a relationship with my own self and my own intuition.
That's beautiful. I love that you break it down like that and say that at first you got nothing and then it was just a tiny little firefly, because that tells other people you're not going to get it right away, but you have to keep asking the question.
Right, exactly. And keep opening the door to the possibility. Yeah. And that's where that leap of faith comes in. That even if right now it seems like I'm never going to get there, I can't hear my intuition, I don't know myself, I don't know what I want, you know, all the things we tell ourselves. Right now, that may feel true, but we have to open the door to the possibility that it could be different. And I love that question, what would be the most loving choice? For some people, a better question is what would be the most fun choice, depending on how miserable you are. But I was personally somebody who's very, very hard on myself. That's what I heard from everybody I knew. You're hard on yourself. And people just said, well, stop being hard on yourself. And to me, that wasn't an answer, because that didn't tell me how. It just told me the problem. So I asked the question of what would be the most loving choice, because I could understand through all the feedback I was getting that I wasn't being loving, but I didn't have a model for what was loving. So I just thought I'd ask the question over and over and over and over. And, you know, there's so many people who feel frustrated by the answers that are floating around because they seem so simple. Like, well, just be nice to yourself, or just do what you want, or just follow your heart. But for many of us, that doesn't mean anything because we don't know how to do it. And this is one of those practices that opens the door for you to figure out how for yourself.
I really like that, because you're right. So many times we get told, don't do this, stop doing that. And we're left sort of going, what do I do instead? Which is a really scary place to be when you're like, okay, but what do I do instead? And so I like how you took this and created a how, I don't know how I'm going to wind up, where I'm going to wind up, but if I just ask myself this question, eventually something will turn up. So you trusted yourself in that process. I love it.
Exactly. Well, I trusted that the possibility was there because I knew other people were different than me. So I wouldn't even say the self-trust was there. I just knew that the possibility, because I saw other people treating themselves differently.
Mm.
But I'll share, this is one of the most exciting things that I'm working on right now, personally and professionally, is something I call these 30-day challenges to break bad beliefs. And it was the same idea last December. Only a few months ago, I was so fed up. I was so fed up with the feeling of I'm not enough and all the different ways it showed up, the ways it showed up in my marriage, the ways it shows up in my business, the way that shows up in my bank account, and just this constant insecurity and lack of clarity, which is ironic because that's what I help other people with. But in my personal life, it felt like I was, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, like switching back and forth. So at last December, I said to myself, that's it. I'm putting a timeline on this. I have 30 days to break this belief of I'm not enough. And it functioned very similarly, which you're helping me realize right now, is that just by putting the intention there, just by putting the timeline there, I didn't know what the alternative was. I didn't know how to not be that way because I've been that way as long as I can remember, decades. I didn't know what the new way of feeling would be, or the new way of thinking, or the new way of showing up, or the new way of making decisions. I didn't know any of that. I just knew that I was fed up and it had to change, and it was going to change now. And that process asked me to, this is where this open door concept came from. It just asked me to take any open door. So if a memory of my brother showed up, okay, let's explore that memory, because I said I was going to break this belief. So anything that's happening, let's do it. Let's see.
Right. Let's get in there.
Out of that. You know, if there was something with work, great. Let's talk about that. There's trips coming up and I'm feeling insecure, or I feel like I'm failing my clients, or whatever fears come up. Okay, let's face that. And, you know, throughout that process, without having a clear path forward, I'd set the intention. And so by the end of that 30 days, I felt like a significantly different person. And looking back, I can say why and all the things I did and, you know, how it worked and why it worked. But I didn't know that going forward. So that's really that leap of faith to not necessarily, I guess it is to trust in yourself, but to trust that when you've said it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Right, right. And that gets to the core for all of us around how we think about our expectations, how we think about ourselves. It's just that mindset piece, which I think is so pivotal for so many people.
It is. It is. And you and I have had this conversation before about looking the other way and letting things go. So when I got so frustrated, I was frustrated about finances, and I was frustrated about how I'm not showing up in my business as I want to. But I'll tell you, everything in that 30 days to break that belief wasn't about money or business. The majority of it was about emotional stuff with my family and relationships, or my own personal healing from sexual trauma. And where many of us give up is those doors start to open and we say, well, that's not relevant. So
right.
I'm failing this. It's not happening for me. And
yeah, we dismiss what comes to us, even though that whatever comes to us can have its own message.
Yes, or is the exact next step to get to where we want to go. And this is the power of the soul, is the soul doesn't work in our linear mind concept. Like the soul's like, I get that you want more money, but let's go over here and talk about your dog that died when you were five. And you're like, no, come on, soul. That is so irrelevant. Come on. And your soul's like, hey, you asked me, I'm showing you, but we don't trust it. We don't trust it. And that's probably the biggest thing that I learned in that 30-day process that now I'm working on with other people and challenges, is that it's just to help them go through all those open doors instead of saying, well, that's not, I don't care about that. Where's the money? I don't care about that. Where's the new partner in my life? I don't care about that. It's like, you got to care about that for right now. Maybe not tomorrow, but for right this minute, that's the door that's opening up.
And what do you think prevents people from seeing these as open doors? What do you think gets in the way?
What's coming up is a single-minded focus. And I think this gets to what we were talking about previously with non-attachment, is when we think we want a solution in our lives, when we think we want a bigger house or a better body or, you know, more money at our job, we get myopic on that one topic. Mm. And so we don't realize that all of our life is connected. So how we feel about our body actually influences how we show up in our jobs, and that influences how we make more money, and vice versa. You know, it all is connected. So it doesn't necessarily matter which string we pull first. And one of my personal examples of that was such an aha moment, is I joined a year-long relationship program to change my interactions with men, because I had a history of sexual trauma. I really struggled with relationships and a lot of anger. And I joined this relationship program just to work on my self-esteem, because I wanted to make more money. But what happened is I ended up finding the love of my life and getting married. And it was this perfect process, because that was the open door. And through him and through the healing I went through in that process, and through the confidence that I've gained now having this relationship and all of the stuff around it, now I'm making more money in my business. But I had to pull the thread of the relationship first.
I love that. I absolutely love that, because you're right. People do get single-minded and get focused and myopic on this has to happen, this has to happen. And then we neglect these other areas of our life, and they're all interconnected. And so this is why I see people who are like, I don't know why, but you know, I just feel a lot more confident these days. And then we start talking about what are they doing differently? And they're like, well, I've been going to the gym and I'm eating better and I'm doing, and I'm like, duh, you know, no disrespect, but do you see how one affects the other? You can't have one area where you're all glowy and wonderful and feel really crappy and insecure in the rest of these areas. It just doesn't work like that.
Exactly. You know, that reminds me of a story. I used to live in a small town, and I was at the post office, and the woman working there said, oh my gosh, Alexis, I have to ask you. So I started this workout routine, and I don't know why I haven't lost weight yet. And I said, well, tell me about what else is happening. She goes, well, I feel better. I have more energy. I'm happier all the time. My meals have changed. I'm so much stronger. You know, I just haven't seen the weight loss, even though I've lost inches, my clothes fit better. I just haven't lost the pounds. And I started laughing, because I thought, well, you did everything you wanted. And then I asked her the best question, which was, well, how long have you been doing it? She said, oh, 2 weeks. Like, you've changed your whole life in 2 weeks and you're worried about a pound?
Right.
But it was that focus. It was that single-minded focus on, I want to lose weight. Even though she was now radiant, healthy, and happy, she wanted to lose weight. But muscles, we know muscles more weight than fat. So, you know, it's just such a classic example of how we get ourselves all tripped up, even though we're getting everything we want.
Right. But she got so focused on the number. There's a number associated here that she was willing to completely overlook the rest of it. And I know that we all do that at times.
Absolutely. And that's why I ended up doing that challenge with myself, because I realized I have a great life. I have a great relationship. I'm happy. I'm healthy. I have great clients. And I was so focused on this one little number in one account, you know, and it was making me feel like a failure. And I had to have that continual daily conversation with myself to prove that I was not actually a failure.
Right, right. And I like the idea that you put yourself in this year-long program, which takes a lot of commitment and it takes a lot of dedication. And it also meant that you were really throwing open these doors and saying, I'm going through. I don't know what's behind these doors, but I'm going through.
Yeah. And for the first 6 months of that process, I was bitter and angry about it, to be honest. But one of the most valuable parts to me and being in that kind of coaching program actually re-energized my commitment to coaching myself, because one of the, if not the most valuable thing that came out of that was getting alternatives. Because the narrative in my head was, I'm terrible at relationships, love's never going to happen for me, I might as well settle, you know, whatever it is. Or it could be a narrative about money, like I never succeed, I make bad decisions, I'm not responsible with money. You know, we all have these narratives that go through our head. And in order to get to a new way of being, we have to repattern the narrative. But I didn't have a way to come up with a new narrative because I'd only ever known my own.
Right.
And having, being in that coaching program gave me access to somebody who had a very different narrative and was focused, because that was her role as my coach in that program, was focused on interrupting my narrative and showing me an alternative. And now that's become such a key part of my own coaching that I do with clients and these breaking bad belief challenges, because that's really what it's about, is we're just playing out the same story over and over and over in our heads, hoping that something's going to be different because we want it to be, but we don't have examples or mentors for a new narrative. But once you change that narrative in your head, then everything changes.
And I think that's the beauty of coaching, is you have somebody who can highlight the story that you've created, the beliefs that you created, and can disrupt them, can challenge you to grow in a different way and to create a new story.
Exactly. Exactly. I describe it like the American game of football, and you know, my client's behind a line and they're holding a football, and the football is their beliefs. It's the narrative. It's the thing that they're struggling with, and they're trying to run to that goal. But I'm not letting that football pass. And so I will just, you can go any way you want. I'm going to block you and that ball until you drop the ball. And then I'll let you walk right on past. But until you drop that belief, you're not getting past me. And that's what I've been the beneficiary of when other people have done for me, that they wouldn't let me not drop that story that was so unhealthy and so unhelpful.
Right.
Yeah.
Power. And that's what I tell clients all the time. You know, a belief is just something that you have told yourself over and over again. That's right. All it is. That's all it is. But you can, and that means you have the choice to change your beliefs.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, it's so powerful once you do it. I was mentioning to you before we jumped on this, you know, I'm now playing with it in such a fun way that last Friday, I decided, no, I'm going to get 3 new clients. And by Sunday, I had 3 new clients. Now, that's never happened to me before. But now that I realize that it's just my own mental talking to myself that makes me show up differently, that makes me act in faith or act in doubt or feel like I'm asking permission and can I have this? And I'm not sure if I can have this. I have to prove that I'm really worthy of it and all that. No, no, no. No, no, no.
No.
Scratch all of that. We just decide and we go from there. And I think, you know, even if not everybody's in the position to work one-on-one with a coach or be in a group program, but that's what I love about that question, what's the most loving choice right now, is that starts to open us to the possibility that there's a different narrative.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Alexis, it's been really enlightening to talk to you today. If somebody wants to find out more about you and what you offer, where can they find you?
Thank you for asking. I'm at alexispierce.com, and you can find me on Facebook under Alexis Pierce, or my handle is The Free and the Brave, or Free and Brave Life. And this has been wonderful. Just so lovely to catch up with you and also to have this deep discussion that hopefully will help people.
I love it. And I thank you so much for giving your time here. And people, listeners, I would just like to ask you to ask yourself this very important question that Alexis has dropped in on us. Ask yourself, what would be the most loving choice right now? What would be the most loving choice? And begin to listen. And it's okay if you don't get anything right away. Like Alexis said, you may just get a little firefly here. But the more you ask, the more you listen, the more you will find out. I'm Dr. Drima. Thanks for being here. I invite you to follow me on Facebook at DrimaDialPhD. See you next week.